Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nozir Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the top line of Daf Mem Beis. The Gemara opens with a quote from a Tanaic source that we saw back on Daf Mem Omid Aleph, 16 rows from the top. The source there dealt with Levim, Nazirim, and Mitzrayim as requiring tiglachas, requiring the haircut. And the source said, and we read in our Gemara, Omar Mar, a quote from there, V'chulam shegilchu shelo betar, all of them, the three categories we mentioned, if they took their haircuts without a razor, O sheshayru shtei cyrus, lo osu v'lo klum, or they shave their entire heads, but leaving two hairs uncut, they have done nothing. Based on this source, the Gemara wants to conclude a general concept. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which says, Rubo Kukulo Midoraisa, that Rove, the majority of things in general, wherever you have an issue of a doubt or a conflict, and you need to resolve it, you can base your resolution on the majority. That concept is that rubo, that the majority, kikulo, is considered like the entire mass, midoraisa. That's a Torah-level idea. The Gemara. Omar Rav Acha Brei Rav Iko Zoysay Meres. From this Tanaic source, we conclude Rubo Kukulo Midoraisa, that where you have Rov, where you have a majority, that is considered like the whole thing, and that is a Torah-based idea. Mimai, well, how do you see that from this? Answer, Midagoli Rachmona Gabi Nozir, from the fact that the Torah reveals to us, with regard to the Nozir, it says, Bayom HaShvi'i Yigalchenu, and on the seventh day of his Nazirus, that he happened to experience a state of Tumah, he shall shave his head. And we say that Hocha, who the Adi Kokulo, here by Nazir, we require all the hair to be shaved. Ho be'almo, but in other cases, Rubo Kokulo. Before going further, let's glance at the Tosfos. On the top line, the top taste is Omar Mar, Oish Shayo Shtei Sarso Lo Osovlo Klum, Zo Samaras de Rubo Kukulo Doraisa, Midagoli Rachmona Gabi Nozir by Yoma Shvigalchenu. From the revelation of the Torah that the Nozir shall take his haircut on the seventh day of purification, the Lo Itzrich, that teaching that he needs to shave his head isn't really necessary. The Kvar Ksiv, the Gilach. There's another pasuk that says he shall shave his head. So why is this idea repeated here? Elash Me'inin. It's here to inform us. Deboinon Tiglachas Mitzvah Shlemo Shaloshaira Klum. That here, a total hair shave is required, where he leaves nothing behind. Here, the Torah went out of its way to tell me that you have to literally remove all the hair. But in general, we would conclude that the majority is as if you did everything. We turn back to the Gemara. Maskif lo Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi asks, regarding the source that was just cited, the scriptural source, Bayom HaShvi Yigalchenu, Hai Benozir Tomei Ksiv. This pasuk appears in the context of a Nozir who became defiled, whereas the Tanaic source that we quoted at the top, back from Daf Mem Amud Aleph, that Tanaic source implied that a Nazir Tohor as well. We are saying Rubo Kikulo. Mahaku Allah Bimarova. Here we have a response that takes a few lines to what Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina's question. Now, Mochkala Barava literally means they jeered what he had asked in Eretz Yisrael. But it's a reference to a particular opinion that says in response, there is no basis for making a distinction between Nazir Tomei and Nazir Tohor. Michti, Nazir Tomei de Betar Minolon, where do we know that a Nazir who had become defiled and needs to take her haircut after 7 days of purification, that the haircut must be done with a razor? Where is that information learned from? Minozir Tor Yolov, it's derived from the rules that pertain to Nozir Tohor. Lacey Nozir Tohor, the Leilif Minozir Tome. Now, let us go in the other direction and learn, derive laws concerning the Nozir Tor from the laws that pertain to Nozir Tomei. Ma Tomei Kishayar Shtei Sayers Velo Klum Ovad. Just like by a Nozir Tomei, after his haircut, if two hairs remain uncut, he hasn't accomplished anything. Hochanami, so too here, with regard to the Nozir Tor, Kishir Shtei Sayers Velo Klum Ovad. If he leaves two hairs behind, he hasn't done anything. So as we said before, in the context of the Nozir, literally everything must be removed. All the hair must be removed. However, in general, Rubo Kikulo. On the side, we have a Nosei topic heading / Mivne structural note with a triangle featured. And we've written Shtei She'elo Spinyan Nozir Shigilach the Ishir Shtei Sayers. Two questions that deal with a Nozir who took the haircut but left behind uncut two hairs. We continue in the Gemara. Boy Abaye, Nozir Shigilach Vishir Shtei Sayers. Abaye asks, a Nozir that took his haircut but left two hairs. Tzomach Rosho, the two hairs remained on his head while the rest of his hair grew back. V'chozar v'gilchon mahu. And then, after having marked, so to speak, those two hairs, identifying those two original uncut hairs, he then cut them, when in the meantime, the rest of his head of hair had grown back. What is the din? Mi me'akvi o lo? Do we say that since when he took the original required Nozir haircut, he left those two hairs, they remain a binding restrictive feature, and his cutting of them right now isn't going to help because at this point the rest of his hair has grown back? Or do we say that, well, right now he's cutting them and that is sufficient? And the fact that the rest of his hair grew back, that is not a restrictive factor. The Gemara doesn't answer that. It goes on with another question. Boy Rava, Nozir Shigilach V'Hiniach Shtei Sayers. You'll notice that we have a number one because this question really appears in two stages. The first stage is rejected as being a question. A couple lines later, you see we squiggle under an Elo Emo. That represents the restatement of what the question ought to be. So in the meantime, Rava is asking about a Nozir that took his haircut, left two hairs, v'gilach achas, and then he came to cut those last two hairs. He cut one v'noshra achas, and the second one fell off. So he didn't do a cutting of the last two hairs. He cut one, but the other one, the last one, fell out. Mahu. Omar le Rav Acha midifti l'ravina. Rav Acha says to Ravina regarding this question, Gilach Sairo, Sairo Komiboya Leila. Rava, is Rava asking about someone who's cutting his hairs individually, one by one? The Rashi explains further. Let's read the Rashi together. Gilach sairo sairo miboyle lerova pshito de kevon de gilach as kol rosho lebarme hanoch shtei sairis. It's clear to us that once he's cut the rest of the hair, all his hair off, with the exception of these last two hairs, the chihadar gilach achas mehen venoshla chaverta, when he then goes to cut the last two, he cuts one and the other one falls out, shapir, it's fine. The ka'ozil umiglach ki'urche, he is, in effect, approaching his haircut in a normal way. The command to Ozil Megaleach Sairo Sairo. It's no different than someone who would be cutting hair, one by one. Olahi Dinoshra Mai Havile Lemevad. He intended to cut each one, those two last hairs. He cut one, the last one then fell out. What could he possibly do about it? So we go back to the Gemara, being that the scenario number one doesn't appear to be something that needs to be asked. It's clear that he's yotzei, that he's fulfilled his nazir requirements, his nazir haircut requirements in that fashion. Elo emol. The Gemara continues number two. Noshro achas v'gilach achas mahu. He cut the hair off his head, left two hairs, and then when he's about to return to cut those last two hairs off, one hair falls out before he cuts any of them, of those last two. One falls out, and he cuts the last one hair. Omar Lay. So he answers, Sayar Ein Kan, Giluach Ein Kan. There is no hair over here, and there's no haircut over here. We ask, E Sayar Ein Kan, if you're saying there's no hair over here, in other words, that the haircut is considered accomplished, so then Giluach Yesh Kan, then there's a fulfillment of the Giluach, the haircut requirement. So how can you say both Sayar Ein Kan and Giluach Ein Kan? That would be almost contradictory. Hochi Komar. So the Gemara answers, Afalpish Sayar Ein Kan, even though technically speaking, there is no more mitzvah of giluach. In other words, the hair requirement has been fulfilled. Ein kan mitzvahs. Let me read that again. Af al pi she'seir ein kan mitzvahs giluach ein kan. You nevertheless do not have the fulfillment of the mitzvah in its fullest form. To appreciate this response, we glance together at the Rosh commentary on the lower part of the page. We have a little star in the Rosh to make it easier to find. Hachi kama afal pi she'seir ein kan mitzvahs giluach ein kan. Hoyol ubetiglachos arishon, since at the initial haircut shear shtei sairis, he left behind two hairs, and with that you don't fulfill the original haircut requirement. V'atik shibol legaleach lomotzah shtei sairis. Now when he comes to complete the haircut, he doesn't see two hairs left. He sees only one hair left. Lo kiyem mitzvahs giluach. He didn't fulfill the mitzvah of giluach in the fullest sense. We continue in the Gemara, but before we continue with the Mishnah, let's just mention regarding that last point that, as we've said till now, cutting all the hair and leaving two hairs behind, it's as if no haircut took place. So you see that in order to accomplish the mitzvah of a proper haircut, he would have to cut off the two hairs. Being that when he came to cut off those two last hairs, one fell out, so he wasn't doing a, we'll say, a full-fledged mitzvah of haircutting. Haircutting would mean you have to cut off the last two hairs. Well, that didn't take place because the first of the last two fell out. You ended up cutting the last hair. So as we saw, there's really nothing you can do about it, but to say that you fulfilled the mitzvah of haircut in the fullest sense, that cannot be said. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a Noseya topic heading. Moni Masnis, and the Gemara will be asking concerning this Mishnah. It's a very brief quote of a brief Mishnah that's quoted here, only one line. The Gemara will ask, who is the author shemechalekes bein choyfeif umefasfei shemutorin l'sriko shasura? the Tana that makes a distinction between these two motions or two actions done to the hair, choyfeif or mefasfeis, that's okay, but sriko is generally understood to be something like combing, that would be forbidden. So the Mishnah says, nozir choyfeif u mefasfeis, avoloi sorek. The Rashi says in the lower part of the page, nozir choyfeif u mefasfeis, choyfeif kmo choyfeif olov ko ayom, loshon megareid. It has to do with scratching one's head. And mefasfeis, Rashi explains, shemafrid tsaros of zumizu, a separation of individual hairs one from the other, but not a separation using a comb. So our Mishnah says that scratching one's head or separating hairs by hand would be okay, but combing would not be allowed. The Gemara, chofeif umefasfeis, money, who would say that there is allowance of chofeif umefasfeis? Rabbi Shimon, this would be in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. The Omar Dover Shein Miskave Mutter. Rabbi Shimon, as a principle that we see applied here, and you see it in Masechet, with regard to Hilchus Shabbos, and you find it in many other locations as well, that, let's say, forbidden outcomes that occurred as a result of an action, but the action was without the intention of producing that forbidden outcome, the person is said to have violated nothing. Nothing wrong was done. That's dover shein miskavein, something that you did not have intent for, mutter, is allowed. So a nozir would be allowed to chofeif, to scratch his head or separate hairs. He has no intention of having the hair itself dislodged. The Mishnah goes on to say, avolo sorek, but he cannot do sorek. Well, asan the Rabbanan. If you're combing your hair, you're combing because you're interested in separating hairs. You're not interested in uprooting the hairs. And yet the Mishnah prohibits that, even though it's a dover she'ein miskaving. You had no intention for the forbidden outcome of hair removal, still the Mishnah restricts it. So that doesn't come out like Reb Shimon, that comes out like those that argue with him, like the Rabbanon. So what kind of Mishnah structure have, even though it's a very short Mishnah, it's split. Reisha, Reb Shimon, Sefer Rabbanon, should we say that the Reisha conforms Reb Shimon? The Sefer does not, it works out like the Rabbanon. Omar, Rabba, Kula, Reb Shimon, he. This entire Mishnah is in accordance with Reb Shimon. You'll ask then, what about the restriction of Sorek? So the Gemara explains, Kaas Sorek, anyone who puts a comb to their hair, Lahasir Nimen Meduldolos Miskavin. His intention is actually to remove the Nimen hairs, Meduldolos, that are loosely attached. In other words, to remove loosely attached hairs. And we dash on the word Miskavin, indicating this is something even Rav Shimon would find to be prohibited. In our previous Mishnah, we saw the word chofeif. The Mishnah that we're about to learn, you'll see Rabbi Shmuel mentioning not to be chofeif, lo yachuf. On the side of our Gemara, under the Nosei, the topic heading, we've written, Ein lachfoif ba'adoma, b'pnei she'masheres es ha'seor. Lachfoif, Tosfos points out, quotes a foreign word, and he says, Shiochuf b'roishoi b'neser v'adoma. This would have to be a process that's probably similar to what we would call rinsing out one's hair, shampooing. The material that one used then, the substance that one used, is either neser, a type of mineral, or adoma. Adoma is translated often as dirt, earth. So our Mishnah has Rabbi Shmuel teaching not to be chofeif using adoma. Why? Because it's masheres as a seir, it causes the hairs to fall out, to be dislodged, to be removed. The Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel, Omer lo yochuf ba'adoma, v'nei she'masheres es ha'seor. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice it's a long question with two parts. Ibaya laho, two sides of the question. Mipnei shehi masheres es haser tanan, is the Mishnah to be understood as an explanation as to why dirt is prohibited, and it is because it, the dirt, causes the hair to fall out. While rinsing it or shampooing it, it will fall out. O dilma mipnei hamasheres tanan. Or is the Mishnah saying not to use dirt, not because dirt itself causes the hair to fall out, but if you use dirt, then you might come to use another substance, a substance that does cause the hair to fall out. The Gemara asks, Lamai nafkamina, what difference does it make? You, either way you look at things, you can't use dirt. Kagon deiko adoma delo masra. The point of difference would be in this analysis, if you have a substance, a material that does not cause any hair to fall out. E amris mitnei shehi masheres tanan. If the analysis is the first way, namely, Rabbi Shmuel says, do not use dirt because it causes hair to fall out. So hecho diadino delo masra shapir. Where you know that it doesn't cause falling out. Masra is the same as masheres, the tuf and the shin interchange. So if the first approach is the way to go, then where you know that the substance does not cause hair to fall out, it would be okay. Elohi amris mipnei hamasheres, if the prohibition against using dirt is a gzera, because using any kind of dirt might be confused with the kind that does cause hair to fall out, then klalo, then all types of adoma would be prohibited, even the kind that doesn't cause the hair to fall out. Teku. So this remains unresolved. The result of this would be that if you take a stringent approach, then you would be prohibited in even using the kind of dirt that does not cause hair to fall out. As we continue with the next mission, you notice a diamond appears, and on the side under the Mivne heading, we've indicated Pu'ulos Asuros Lenozir, different actions that are prohibited for prohibited upon a Nozir. Just the bird's eye view of what we're going to see, you'll see reference made to his drinking of wine, shaving hair on his head, and exposure to defilement. The Mishnah: Nozir shohaya shoyse yayin kol hayom eino chayav elo achas. A nozir that was warned at the beginning of the day, don't drink wine, and he spends the rest of the day drinking. He might consume many bottles of wine. He's only going to be liable to one punishment, one set of lashes. Omru lo, al tishte, v'hu shoseh. He's warned numerous times, do not drink. And each time after the warning, he drinks. So you have a situation of warning, drinks. The Mishnah tells us, chayav al kol achas v'achas, he's going to be liable for each drinking. Hoyo megaleach kol hayom, eino chayav elo achas. If he was warned at the beginning of the day and he starts cutting hairs, and we know that a nozir is chayav for cutting each hair carries with it a potential penalty, but he received only one warning, so the rest of the day that he spends cutting theirs will result only in one punishment. Omrulo al tigaleach v'megaleach. He's warned numerous times, and following each warning, he cuts another hair. Chayav al kol achas v'achas. He'll be held responsible and liable to punishment for each one. Hoyim etami l'meisim kol ayoyim enu chayav el achas. He defiled himself to the dead all day. He's going to be responsible or guilty of only one punishment. Omrlo al tetame v'metame chayav al kol achas v'achas. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, the topic that we'll be seeing now is explained or introduced on the side under our Nosei / Mivneh heading. A double underline appears. This highlights the Machlokas Rabba and Rav Yosef. Be'inyan, and we should say that Rabba and Rav Yosef both are trying to represent Rav Huna's opinion. So you have two versions of Rav Huna. And they have a disagreement. Be'inyan Kefel Tumos Benozir. Multiple Tuma as it applies to a Nozir. Kago Noga B'meis V'nichnas Lo'oyal HaMeis. Let us imagine he touched a corpse and then went into a room, it went into an overshadow where he and the and a corpse were both located. That is a case of, we'll say, Kefel Tumos, a repeat Tumos. We noted that there's a Machlokis Rashi and Tosfos B'Havonas HaSugya. Not unusual for our Masechta, a disagreement or a discrepancy arises between Rashi and Tosfos and how to present the Gemara. The Gemara. Itmar, Omar Rabba, Omar Rav Huna. Mikra Mole Diber HaKosuv. Lo Yitama. Ukshu Oimer Lo Yovo. Laziro al hatuma, laziro al habia. Avotuma vituma lo. We look at the Rashi at the top. Mikra mole dibra kosuv benozir. Means a posuk appears explicitly in nozir. Bamidbor perek vav posuk zayin lo yitama lehem b'moisam. Laziro al hatuma. To warn nazirim not to become defiled to the dead. Ukshechozo v'yomar kol yimei haziro l'Hashem al nefesh meis lo yavo. That's it. Posuk vov. Chozar v'ziro al bias oihel shavo meis. The prohibition of entering a room in which there is a corpse. Lo marloch. The, we'll say, the double warning that you see here tells me she'im nitma b'meis v'chozer v'nichnas b'oil she'esh b'meis chayev shtayim, that if he defiled himself by touching a corpse outdoors, no overhang, no overshadowing over him and the corpse, just he happened to touch a corpse and then went into an oil. An oil, we can use the example of a room just for convention, but it includes cases of a common overshadow. And then he went into an oil in which there was a corpse, chayev shtayim. He's thereby violated the two prohibitions. Rashi goes on, avol tuma v'tuma, avol im nitma b'meis, v'chozer v'noga b'meis acher, ba'oid shunogea b'meis rishon, Afalpi shehisru bo eino chaya velo achas do metame v'koi. But if he, let us say, touched a corpse, and while he's touching the first corpse, he then touches a second corpse, he will not be considered an offender of a second offense. As Rashi said, because he's already he's already in the middle of his original tuma by touching the first body. As we mentioned before, Tosfos explains this in a different fashion, but for the time being, we will continue with the Rashi. Rav Yosef Omar. Rav Yosef reacts to Rabba's presentation of Rav Huna. Note that this lasts a number of lines. We have a long marking. Rav Yosef says, Ho'elikim, it's an expression, a type of, let's see, oath. Omar Rav Huna, afilu tuma v'tuma. Rav Huna says there is a double violation for the case of being metame, touching a corpse, and then touching a second corpse. The Omar Rav Huna, Nozir Shoya Oimei Beveis HaKvoros, Vahoshitu Lo Meso Umeis Acher, a Nozir who was standing in a cemetery, and standing in a cemetery is understood to be an example of an individual who defiled himself to the dead. So you have someone that defiled himself to the dead, and they handed him either a dead relative of the Nozir Meso, is his own mace, meaning a dead relative of his, or some stranger that was deceased, Venoga Bo, and touched that corpse, Chayev. Amai, why is he Chayev? Ho mitame v'koyim. Well, he's already Tomei by having been in the cemetery. El Alav, Shma Minom Rav Huna. From here we see that Rav Huna holds Afilu Tumo v'tumo, for having defiled himself a second time while being defiled already, he is considered guilty. Esfei Abaye. So Abaye asks on Rav Yosef from a Tanaic source, Kohen Shohoya Lo Meis Munoch Al Ksefo, a Kohen who, by the way, is also, like a Nozir, prohibited against defilement to the dead. A standard Kohen has a less restrictive prohibition, but both fall into the category of being warned against defilement to the dead. Kohen Shohoya Lo Meis Munoch Al Ksefo, a Kohen that had a body slung over his shoulder. Vahoshitu Lo Meso Umeis Acher, and they handed to the Kohen a dead relative or another deceased individual. Venoga Bo, and touched it, touched this second dead body. Yochol Yehei Chayev, will he be considered guilty for that second touching? Talmud Lomar Velo Yechaleo, the Torah warns against his defiling, profaning his priesthood. And we learn from this, when is there a violation? B'misha'eno mechulo, when one is pure and then initially defiles himself. Yotzazeh, to the exclusion of this scenario, shumechulo ve'omeid, he's already defiled. So when he's already defiled, the second defilement is of no concern. Well, that would be against Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef claims that Rav Huna holds that a Nozir who was already defiled by being in the cemetery and was handed a corpse, that second action of defilement does create guilt. Omar Lei. So Rav Yosef says back to Abaye, V'tikshi loch masnisen. Well, doesn't the Mishnah pose a difficulty to you, Disnan? The Mishnah says, Hoye metame lemeisim kol hayomeinu chayev elo achas. Omru lo al tetame chayev al kol achas vachas. Here you see from the last part of this quote where we dashed underline, we see multiple violations. So that each time he touches another corpse, he should be held guilty. And that's against what you, Abaye, are trying to argue. Ve'amai, why, according to you, is he chayav for each corpse? Ha'metame v'koyim, is he not already defiled? Well then, elokash yadodi. Well now, we have a seeming contradiction between two sources. The source that Abaye quoted indicates that the Kohen, once he's defiled, his second contact does not result in any further liability, whereas our Mishnah would seem to say to the contrary. Lo ikashya. Really, there is no contradiction. Kan bechiburin, kan shelo bechiburin. According to Rashi, the case of chiburin, chiburin literally means attached. That when we saw in the source that Abaye quoted, the Kohen had the corpse, a corpse slung over his shoulder. While the corpse was on his shoulder, he touched a second mace. So the touching of the second mace does not increase any liability because he's already attached to a source of defilement, of death defilement. So in a case like that, it's only viewed as an extension of the original defilement. However, our Mishnah, the second source quoted, it says Chayv al kolachas ve'achas. That's a case shelo b'chiburin, meaning he touched one body, then detached himself from that body, and then touched a second body and detached himself from that, and so on and so forth. That would result in multiple violations. So the case of chiburin, for our purposes, can be described as one extended tumah, a singular extended tumah. The Gemara asks, the tumah b'chiburin d'oraisa? Is this concept of attachment to tumah a Torah concept? Torah meaning Torah versus, let's say, rabbinic stringency. Is this a Torah level concern? The Omar Rav Yitzchok bar Yosef Omar Rav Yanai Lo Omru Tuma b'chiburin elo l'truma v'kotchim avo l'nozir v'oisa pesach lo. Four different areas of halacha were just mentioned: truma, kotchim, nozir, and oisa pesach. And the distinction is made: the concept of tuma b'chiburin would have relevance only for truma consumption and sacrificial detail, but with regard to a nazir and someone who is doing a korban pesach, someone who is about to do a korban pesach, the chiburin concern would fall away. We haven't explained this yet, but just to conclude the question, the amris doraisa maishna, if chiburin is considered one long tumah, why should any distinction be made? In order to appreciate the question, we'll learn together the Rashi. On the second line under the Gemara text, the tumah b'chiburin, mi havyelo doraisa kechada tumah, is it on a Torah level considered like one extended tumah? Since when he touched the second body, he was still attached to the first body, he's not considered liable for a second offense because it's just one long tumah. Is that a Torah level concept? Continuing in the Rashi, if a person touches a corpse, the oiches bo, and he clings upon the corpse, the yado acheres nesuna biad chavero, and his other hand is clasped within the hand of his friend, his living friend. Lo amris shegam oisa chavero kamishu mechuber v'negeh betumazu. We don't say that the friend is considered attached to the corpse. Elalinim kochim utruma. Only with regard to sacrifices and truma, the tithe given to kohanim. She'eno yochol lechol bohen ad shiva. That if the friend happened to be a Kohen and he wanted to partake of Truma or sacrifices, he would have to wait 7 days. Namely, we would be viewing the friend, who's not directly attached to the corpse, but through this connection to someone that is touching the corpse simultaneously, we would view the friend as being Tomei for 7 days, which is synonymous with himself having, as if he himself touched the corpse. Avol le'inyan nazir listor nazirusa lahavi korban al tuma But if that friend was a nazir, and the question would arise, does he lose the nazirus days that he counted? Would he then have to bring sacrifices for his having defiled himself to the dead, or if it was the 14th of Nisan and he had to do a Korban Pesach, would we say that he is now restricted from doing a Korban Pesach? Like would be the case, anyone who became defiled to the dead, directly to the dead, within a week before Pesach, so that when the 14th of Nisan, which is the date for doing the Pesach, you would still be within your 7-day Tumah period, would this person be restricted from doing the Korban Pesach? Lo amru shtei Tumah b'chiburin. With regard to the Nazir and the Yosef Pesach, we don't view the friend as if he's attached. The Rashi goes on, the Amris Dimidoraisa Havi Choshev Tumas Chiburin Kituma Richto. If you are going to say that while being attached to Tuma, any further attachment is considered just like one long extension of the Tuma, then Rashi goes on, Maishno Nozir V'yosef Esach Mikotshim Utruma. Why should there be any distinction? We turn back to the Gemara, and I dare say that many of you might have already guessed the answer before going on in the Gemara. Kan b'chiburei Odom b'Odom, kan b'chiburei Odom b'meis. If you're dealing with one that we said before, a friend that grabbed the hand of someone who was touching a corpse, that's the case of chiburei adam adam, where someone is attaching himself to a person who in turn is touching a body. That is the, we'll say, tumah b'chiburin, in which we make a distinction between Truma Kotchim versus Pesach and the Nozir. However, the case of Chiburei Odom B'meis, there we say that it's considered one long Tuma, whereby a person touched a corpse or had a corpse slung over his shoulder, and then he touches another corpse. That second corpse does not engender a second liability, because of the concept of Tumah Richta, one long Tumah. The case of a person connected to a person who is touching a mace, the idea of one long Tumah extending to the second party, that is limited. It's not the same thing as the case of Chiburei Odom B'mace, one person touching, we'll say simultaneously, two bodies. We continue with further analysis of what we've learned till now. Aval tuma v'tuma lo deha metame v'koyim. We said above, we have a little arrow to help you navigate. And you see way above, when Rabba initially presented his version of Rav Huna, he presented it with a distinction between a case of tuma v'tuma versus tuma ubiya. Whereas in the case of Tumah V'Tumah, he had been touching corpse number one, and while touching corpse number one, he came into contact with corpse number two. There we said that the second corpse does not generate an additional liability. However, Tumah Ubiyah, but however, with regard to Tumah Ubiyah, Rav Huna, according to Rava, said the subsequent entrance after having touched the corpse, that does generate a second tuma. So now the Gemara questions this distinction. Tum aval tuma v'tuma lo deha mitame v'koyim. Why does the second corpse not engender a second liability? It's because he's already tome. He's already in contact with the first body. But the point is, he's already tome. Well, tumo bionami hometame v'koi. In the case of someone that had contacted a mace, and then went into a room where there was a second body. Before he entered that room, he was already Tomei. Why then do you say that he is chayev, he is guilty of entering a room with a body in it? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, kan bebayis kan besode. We look at Rashi in order to really appreciate this answer. Kan bebayis kan besode. Ki amrinon anan dechayev al habio vialatuma. When it was said, when we said, the opinion that Rabba presented above, that there would be two violations. Ki amrinanan dechayev al habio vial hatuma, that he's chayev for both the entrance into the room and for the initial touching. Kagon de nichnas bebayis shameis lesoichoi. That is a case where a person who had not been defiled walked into a room in which there was a corpse. The tuma ubio bahadi hadodi asyon. This already is a new approach to what we have said before. So that Rabbi Yochanan is acknowledging the concept of a double liability. That's a case where the two problems arose at once, Bahadi Hadodi. Namely, the entrance to a room in which there's a corpse, so there's the guilt of entering a room with a corpse, and also there's guilt for incurring defilement. The Idoch Damoron Yotzezeshim Chulvayoyvet, the other case, which is represented in the Tanaic source that Abaye had brought into this discussion, which says, to the exclusion of someone who was already defiled, that a second defilement does not impose an additional liability. Kegoyin shenoga b'meis shebesodeh. That's a case where he touched a body outdoors. V'hondar nichnas boil shemeis tachtov, and then he went into a room, finding himself under the same overshadow, the ceiling, under the same ceiling as a corpse, the potter. There he would be exempt. And I would like to suggest that this explanation is presenting, as we said, only one offense, but it's describing the very way we described the original Rabbah, quoting Rav Huna, in saying that there would be two offenses. So Rabbi Yochanan is telling us as follows. There's a concept of a double violation, but that's only if the two problems set in simultaneously. So he can't choose one over the other, so he's guilty for both. However, where they are in succession, where one had already become Tomei by virtue of having touched a body outdoors and then walked into a room where there was a body, he's mechulvum, he's already been defiled, so he's not guilty for the second defilement. The Gemara, though, asks, Bebayis Nami, even the case of entering a room where there's a corpse. We're at the top of the Mem Gimel Omer Aleph. Is it really so that entering a room in which there's a corpse, a person that had not been defiled before and enters the room, the two offenses happen simultaneously, namely entrance, lo yovo, and defilement? Is it really simultaneous? So the Gemara again at the top of Mem Gimel Omer Aleph. Bebayis nami, kevend ayul yodei istoyev. When people walk, they have a tendency to swing their hands. So that as a person is entering the room, technically speaking, his hand enters first, and that imparts tumah. Ki ayo kule, when he fully enters, hi tomehu, he's entering as already as an individual's already been defiled, so that the hand going into the room, that's not called entrance. Your whole body has to enter in order to be called entering. But when your hand entered the room before your entire body, at that point you absorb tumah. So that what then do we see? That the two offenses of defilement and entrance are not really simultaneous. Elo Amar Rabbi Elazar. Well, what we have here is a series, a triangle, you can see, series of answers, and on the side, Nosei, Hemshech, a continuation of the topic, and the Mivneh, the structure. These triangles are Hezberim, Eicha Nichlis Lebayis, Nitmoshtei Atumos, Lo Yitamev, Lo Yovel Bevasachas. How could it be that entrance to a room in which there is a corpse, that in fact the two violations appear simultaneously? So Rabbi Elazar suggests, Elo Omar, Rabbi Elazar should Siref Yodo Mishum Tuma Iko Mishum Bia Leko Vitsiref Gufo Tuma Ubia Behadi Hadodi Kaosu. Rashi on the third line from the top, Elo Omar Rabbi Elazar, Siref Yodo Kolhecho De Hoishit Yodo Likones Tchila. Siref in this context then would mean wherever the hand was extended to enter first. So then Rashi goes on, Mishum Tumo Iko, Mishum Bio Leko. There is defilement, but there is not yet entrance. Velohavi Kemad Asian Tumo Bio Badi Adodi. And it's not as if the two are happening simultaneously. Vi Eno Chaya Velohachas Sherik Farmuchul Vioimedu. Elohecho Elohocho Bemayaskinon. The case that Rabbi Yochanan featured is what? The Tziriv Gufo, Klomar, Sheikhnis Kol Gufo Ke'echod. He was careful, let us say, to make sure that his hand wouldn't enter first. He extended his body, we'll say, to enter first. The Tumo Bio Bahadi Adodi Kasyan. In such a case where he's making sure that his body and his arms enter all at the same time, so both set upon him simultaneously. As the Gemara goes on, though, we're going to be focusing on what is happening in, we'll say, slow motion or stop motion photography in a very detailed fashion. The Gemara asks, even the case where Belozer is describing, where he, let's say, he clasps his hands to his side, but even in that case, the person walks in a statue-like posture. Is it not so, though, that his nose protrudes ahead of his body, extends forth from his face? Is it not so that his nose enters first, and the tumah sets upon him, nochis le'tumah, the tumah sets upon him, and he has not yet entered to be a violation of lo yavo? So the two offenses are not simultaneous. Elo Omar Rava. Rava presents his distinction. Hichnis yodo mishum tumo iko mishum bia leka. Hichnis gufo tumo ubia bahadi hadodi koasyon. Now just by translating the Gemara, you're not going to really make sense of it, because he seems to be saying the same thing that Rabbi Elazar said. But Tosfos explains that Hichnis Gufo is a case where he bent his head, he tilted his head backwards outside the house, so that you don't have the nose entering first. So Rava said that if your hand is extended and enters before the rest of you enter, so then they're not simultaneous. You have tumah, but you don't have bio, you don't have entrance yet. However, if you tilt your head back and enter that way, so then you'll have both your defilement and entrance simultaneous. Question. When you're walking into the house, even with your head tilted back, is it not so that your toe enters before the rest of you as you're walking in? And if that be the case, so then the tuma is affecting you before you've entered. So you don't have the advantage of saying simultaneous entry in order to, or simultaneous offense in order to explain how you can be in violation of both. Ela Omar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa has a new approach. How can we explain both offenses happening simultaneously? The offense of defilement and entrance to a room where there is a corpse. We can note ahead of time that Rav Papa and Marbar Rav Ashi will give answers that remain, that are not challenged. So Rav Papa's scenario is Kigon She Nichnos Beshita Tevu Migdal. He entered a room while contained within an enclosure, within a, we could say within a box or a chest. He was totally enclosed. That enclosure, which is referred to either Shido, Tevo, maybe different forms of closets or boxes that were brought into a room where there was a corpse. He's at that point not defiled because of his containment. And someone came along, and Tosfos adds, and this guy helped as well, removing the box wall, the box covering. Now, if you remove the box covering while in the room where there is a corpse, so the tuma ubiyo bahadi adodikasyon, the defilement and his entrance, so to speak, are happening simultaneously, because that's his first entrance into this defiled environment. While he was contained in the box, he was not considered in the same domain as the corpse. But with the removal of the box top, he is now considered having entered the domain of the corpse, because the same overshadow that covers him is also covering the corpse, and the ceiling of the room. Marbar Rav Ashi Yomar Kigon, his example of simultaneous tuma, to go to Ayel Kshugoises. The nozir entered the room while the party was in the throes of death. Goses, he wasn't actually dead yet, but he was in the throes of death. So his entrance into the room doesn't represent any form of defilement. And there's also no offense in his having entered the room while the person was still technically alive. And while the nozir was in the room, this guy dies. The tumo bia bahadi hadodi ka'asyon. There the defilement and entrance are said to be simultaneous. And in a case like that, the two offenses would apply. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.